Okay, so we're holding on Lamed Amr Aleph, 8 lines from the bottom. The line begins the Gozel. And we learned in the Mishnah that we learned in the Mishnah the first two psulim of a lulav, and we're going to say throughout the parent, those apply to the other minim as well, is if it's stolen or if it's dry. And we were discussing the question of whether these apply to only the first day or do they apply to all the days. We said that as far as Yavish, it should apply to all the days because it's not harder. And since the Torah says about the Esther that it has to be harder, we learn from that all the other minions do too, although we're going to revisit that point later. And as far as Gozel, the idea is, even though in theory it ought to be mutter on the other days, except the first, because only on the first days it doesn't need to be lachem, but because it's a mitzvah ba'avera, therefore even the rest of the days is possible, we're saying. Now, the last thing we said was actually that Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Nachmeni said that no, that since on the other days of Sukkot you can be yotze with a borrowed lulav, then also you can be yotze with a stolen one. But he holds, in other words, that he's not concerned about the matter of mitzvah bar aveda. Tosfos explains because we're talking about times when the mitzvah of lulav and esrog is only dirabanan, and this matter of mitzvah bar aveda, according to him, would apply only when it's daraisa. So therefore, so it's only the first day is a puzzle, the other days is a kosher. So the Gemara says, must it Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, I have a contradiction. How can you, Rav Yitzchak, who are an Amora, say that? You're contradicted by the Mishnah. Lulav ha-gozov ha-yavish puzzle. The Mishnah had said that a stolen lulav or a dry lulav is puzzle. Now, we have to notice, actually, that the word gozov over here, remember, there's two kinds of stealing in halacha. There's gneva and there's gzela. Gneva is generally when a person steals something and the other person doesn't know about it. Gzela is, broadly speaking, gzela is when he does know about it, but not really, actually. Really, the distinction is that gzela involves actually grabbing it from the other person's hand, and gneva includes any kind of stealthy way of stealing it. So it can include the typical kind of thing. For example, let's say where a person goes and, you know, breaks into somebody's house, for example, or whatever, and then takes this thing. It can also include, in some places, the Gemara says, an armed bandit is considered a ganev as well, because if he was a gazlan, would be that he wouldn't even need to be armed. He would just go and take the thing by force. Anyway, the point is that we're going to... But first, Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, we're saying that a stolen lulav is possible and a dry lulav is possible. Now, hagozel implies that it's possible, hashol kosher, implying that there's a certain period of time during which a stolen lulav is possible, but a borrowed lulav is kosher. So we have to ask ourselves, Amos, when is this talking about? Elaim of the Yom Tivrishin, we're holding a couple of lines from the bottom of Lamed Amar Aleph. Elaim of the Yom Tivrishin, are we talking about on the first day of Yom Tiv? Of course not. A borrowed lulav can't be kosher on the first day. Haksiv lachem. After all, the pasuk says v'lokatam lachem, and that means yishal lachem. That has to be yours. V'ayilav yidehu. That's not yet a borrowed one. Is not his. So when are we talking about that you're able to use a borrowed one? Because then the Mishnah is implying that by saying that only a stolen one is possible, implying a borrowed one is kosher. Elalav the Yom Tiv sheni. Necessarily, it must be talking about beginning on the second day. Now, as we said yesterday, the second day for this purpose doesn't necessarily mean the second day for us, B'nai Chutz La'aretz, because since we keep the second day as Yom Tov because of Sfeika D'Yoma, then the rules of Lachem and all the other things that are possible, all the other things that are possible on the first day might apply to the second day as well. When we say the second day over here, we mean the second day in Eretz Yisrael, or we mean the beginning the third day outside Eretz Yisrael. So Elolav Yom Tov Sheni V'Katani Gozel Posel, and yet we're still saying that a stolen lulav is posel, implying that. So what are you telling me of Yitzchak? There's a difference between the first day and the other days. So the answer is Rava Omar, Omar Rava. So the answer is that Rav Asi, there's a different Girsa. Anyway, so Rava or Rav Asi answers La'olam b'yamtiv rishon. Actually, that's not necessarily a question. You could still, after all, say that the Mishnah is talking about that the Mishnah is talking about only on the first day. You're going to ask, why didn't the Mishnah tell us about the case of a borrowed one, which we need to know that also, that a borrowed one is also on the first day. You could argue the lo mibayah karma. You could say that the Mishnah is telling us one of those needless to say things. Lo mibayah shol d'lav yidehu, needless to say, a borrowed lulav is possible, because after all, it's not his. Aval gozel, but when it comes to a stolen lulav, em astam zele yish bailavu, you could argue that in general, when there's gzela, and again, we just said that gzela involves, taking the thing from the other person by force. Unlike gneva, where you take something and the other person may not know about it.
You know what? Let's see. Is this any better? Maybe you all can hear me better now. I'm not going to use the speaker today. I'll just use the phone speaker. Okay. Anyway, let's continue. So you could say that when the Mishnah mentions Gozel and it doesn't mention Shol, Rava said you could still argue that we are in fact talking about on the first day of Sukkot. You're going to ask in that case, why is the Mishnah only mentioning Gozel and not mentioning Shol at all? You could say, Loi Midboya Karma, you could say the Mishnah is telling us one of those needless to say things. Loi Midboya Shol, needless to say a borrowed one, Delavdi Day, who obviously can't use it, it's not yours. Aval Gozel, but when it comes to a stolen one, Ema, you might have thought there's more of a reason maybe that a stolen one should be fine rather than a borrowed one. Stam Zela Yirush Bailam, because when Gzela again involves that the other person knows right then and there that you took it. You blatantly went and grabbed it away from him without even needing, as I mentioned before, when you have armed bandits, for example, the Gemara sometimes calls an armed bandit a ganav, in the sense, even though you know that he took it, but he had to be armed, and that means he had to sneak around, he had to hide out to do it, and therefore, in that sense, like, there's an element of the owner not knowing who it was, when it was, whatever, as opposed to Gzela, is actually going and taking it blatantly from him. So he knows that you took it. Ema, so you might have said, Stam Gzela Yirush Bailamu. So when there's Gzela, right away we can assume that there was Yirush, right away we can assume the owner gives up ever getting it back. And therefore that should be enough maybe for it to be considered his. So maybe there would be more reason for Gozel to be possible than Shol. Kamash Malan, and therefore you could say that that's why the Mishnah is telling us that Gozel is possible. So again, one way we could understand it, which is how we did originally, is the Mishnah is talking about on all days of Sukkot and saying that Gozel is possible because, as we said before, mitzvah bar ba'avera. But that would be according to the beginning of the Gemara over here and also according to the Ami. On the other hand, according to the Yitzchak, we can say that no, the Mishnah is talking only about the first day, and it's saying that a borrowed one is possible. You would have thought maybe a stolen one should be kosher. The answer is that no, it's not, but the rest of the days the Mishnah is not addressing. Okay. More on this topic of stolen Dalad Minim. So we're saying this matter of stealing, lulav gozel, in connection with the lulav, but as we're going to go through the perek, we're going to see the same thing applies to all the other minim as well. So Amar Rav Huna, Lahanu Avankari. So Rav Huna said to these Avankari, Rashi explains that Avankari are people like small business people who sell all kinds of small things. In modern terms, it might be almost like the equivalent of people who run a 99-cent store or something. So these are people, they're buying various things in bulk, and then reselling them. One of the things that they would sell around Sukkot time is Hadassah. And then on the side of it, here it brings from the Aruch that the word avantari is a Persian word meaning people who do work for the Nasi. Whatever the case, these avantari are Jews. So Rav Huna tells them, Kizav Nisu Osamigoyim, when you buy Hadassim to resell for Sukkos, when you buy from the Goyim, Loi Tigzuzun Akin, you yourselves should not cut Hadassim from the ground, Elulug Zazura Inhu Vyavu Lahu. Rather, you should ask the Goyim to cut the Hadassim, and they should give them to you. My timer. Now, why is that? Because Stam Goyim Gazloni al Osenegu. Stam Goyim, if we don't know one way or the other, steal land. Now, Rashi explains that we might be talking about that the land used to belong to a Jew. And we're going to talk about in a second what the consequences of that are. The Alter Rebbe actually, when he brings this halacha in Shulchan Aruch, he brings that the truth is it would actually apply to a large extent also if the land originally belonged to a goy. Now, in later times, not necessarily do you have this kind of concern that goyim stam steal land, especially in places where they have land registries. And in fact, the halacha is, if we're talking about, Alter Rebbe goes on to explain that if, for example, we're talking about land that was conquered, you know, a government, for example, sent people to conquer a land, that's legitimate and it does belong to them. Here we're talking about an individual goy, not under color of law, goes and steals land from another person, from a yid according to Rashi over here, or from a yid or a goy according to other Rishonim and according to Altseva. Anyway, the problem then is the karta einu nigzeles. Land in halacha cannot be considered to be stolen. Because Rashi explains that in Bava Kama, Rashi brings from Bava Kama where we learn it from Sukkim over there, that the whole concept, now what we're saying is like this, when a Ganav or a Gazlan steals something, there comes a point, before we were talking about Yirsh, soon we're going to talk about other things, there comes a point where that object becomes legally his. He's still responsible to pay back for it, of course, but you can't make him return the actual item itself. When it comes to land, that doesn't work. So when it comes to metalplin, that would work. For example, a person steals some metalplin from somebody else, there comes a point where the other person has yush, where he says an expression like vaila the certain kiss. Oy vey, I lost this, I'm not getting it, I lost this, I'm not getting it back, or words to that effect. And then we say that at that point, that object becomes the gazlan's. But that doesn't apply to land. So therefore,
a question.
Yeah.
If someone steals something that's totally unique, a Picasso or a whatever, something very unique, so what's the halacha then? It's unique. It cannot be replaced.
Well, it's true, but that's neither here nor there. The point is, the question is whether the owner has use. Does the owner, in the case of a Picasso, for example, obviously the owner is going to put much more effort into getting it back, so it's highly unlikely that he's going to have use of it, but nevertheless, it's possible. He may just say, you know what, forget about it. I have no idea who it was.
No. If something's totally unique, nobody is going to have use.
Well, then
that's not true.
Fine, then in that case, the Gazlan will never require it. Okay.
Okay. Then, that's my question.
Right, so that's the answer then. It all depends on you. It all depends whether the owner is going to say, you know what, forget about it. I see I have no recourse. I see I have no way of getting it back. Right. Now,
you see, in cases where stolen art was stolen during the Holocaust, the owners never actually made use. Never.
I don't know about that, actually, when you consider that it was stolen from them when they themselves are on the way to the concentration camps. If nothing else, they may have had Yirsh that they themselves are not likely to get it back in this world. But I don't know. It's a good question. I know that there was a lot of discussion in various Sifrei Halacha, in various contemporary Sifrei Halacha about that kind of thing. But anyway, let's continue the Gemara. Anyway, the point is, this whole concept that Yirsh allows the Ganav to acquire the thing, and then he only has to pay the value of it, that does not apply to land, we're saying. We learned that from a pasuk. So what happens is, this land, which hypothetically we're saying that the Goy stole from a Jew, or maybe even from another Goy, the problem is, therefore, it's still considered stolen. It's still not the Ganav's property. Therefore, Hilkach, therefore, continues Rabbona, Ligzizuha Inhu, let the Goyim themselves who currently own or possess the land, let them cut the Adasim, Kihefi de Lehu Yirsh Bailami, the Dayodidhu, that way they are the ones who accomplish that now there's Yirsh on the Hadasim, and then the Shimi Rishus, the Adaihu, and then what happens is when it comes to you, then you have a further stage in it, which is Shinu Yirshus, which is changed ownership from one person to another. So Rashi explains 2 points over here. Number one is that Rav Huna may hold that Yirsh by itself is not enough for the Ganav or the Gazlan to acquire title. Besides Yirsh, you also need Shinu Yirshus. So therefore, so you need those two stages. So if the Jews themselves were to cut the Hadassim from the ground, only one of those things would have been accomplished. The ground itself, the land itself, there's no Yirsh on at all. So therefore, the Hadassim themselves, there'd only be Yirsh when they cut them from the ground, and that's not enough. And the other point that Rashi makes is that according to Rav Huna, yes, Yirsh would be enough. The problem is that if the Jews are the ones who cut the Hadassim, then it comes out they're the ones who are doing the Gezel. And then you'd have a problem with Mitzvah Ba Ba Ba. So like this, the Goyim should be the ones who cut them. They're the Gazlonim. And now when they give them to the Jews to sell, or sell them to the Jews in order to resell, then you don't have the problem of Mitzvah Ba Ba Ba. Tosfos discusses over here at great length. You can see over here there's a long Tosfos that discusses the ins and outs of this matter of stolen things and when is it nikan, when not. And in particular, Tosfos focuses on something that we're going to discuss soon on Lamed Aleph of an Aleph about a stolen sukkah, which there's a number of different, we're going to talk soon in the Gemara about a stolen sukkah, and there's actually a number of different aspects of what constitutes a stolen sukkah. Among them are cases, for example, you can have a case where somebody built a sukkah on their own property, and then somebody else goes and kicks them out of it and takes over the sukkah. That would be an example of what we're talking about over here, Kavkein and Exelis, that the land itself and the sukkah that's attached to it can't legally be stolen. Therefore, it's still in the hazakah of the original owner. As opposed to, you have various other cases. For example, you can have a case where a person builds a sukkah on a wagon, as we learned in the previous Perek, that you're allowed to do that. Now, that's not attached to the ground anymore. That's metalzelin. Therefore, it's the same kind of thing. If Reuven then goes and throws Shimon out of the sukkah mobile and takes it over, then Reuven can't be yotze with that sukkah. Then we would say it is stolen, as opposed to the first case where the sukkah is built on the ground, where then we would say it's not considered la'alocha stolen. It would be considered la'alocha more as if he borrowed it. It's not, you're not allowed to borrow in that way by forcing somebody out. But you can't passel it as a sukkah zula. The most that you can say is maybe that Reuven shouldn't make a bracha on it because he'd be blaspheming Hashem by making a bracha on something that he stole. But actually, yotze, the mitzvah of sukkah, if he did that, he could. As opposed to, again, Tosfos is saying, a sukkah on a wagon, let's say, where you don't have that consideration of karka in nixelis, then Reuven, in fact, would not be yotze sitting into the sukkah. And then you have a few other cases of stolen sukkahs, some of which we're going to discuss in the Gemara soon. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara over here. So the bottom line is, so Rav Huna is telling these Avankari, these Jewish merchants, that you want to make sure that you're not the ones who are doing the Gzema, that if there's any possibility, Bechlal, before we talk about it, it's not even necessarily, do we have to assume about any particular piece of land that there's a chance that a Goy stole it from a Yid? Not necessarily, but when it comes to the mitzvah of Dalad Minim, we want to try to be extra careful. And to say, even if it's something that's not necessarily the case, but nevertheless, we still want to be careful. Tosfos also points out, by the way, now that at the beginning of Perek Ela Metzias, you have a famous sugya over there where Abaya and Rava argue about something called Yirsh Shalemi Das. If a person has Yirsh on something that they lost, and the other person who picked it up doesn't know that the other one had Yirsh, does that work for halacha or not? The halacha is that it's not. So how is the Yirush over here, that hypothetically the owners are going to have Yirush when the Hadassim are picked, because now it's Metalpilin and Hadassim are not something unique, and they know they know there's no real way of getting it back. So how would that work? And the answer is that Tosfos says that's if you get it before the owner even knows he lost it, then you can talk about Yirush Shalemidas or not. But here, the owner knows already he lost the field. He knows that he's eventually going to have to find some way of getting this guy to court in order to get back his field. So right, so therefore, so when you pick the Hadassim, not when you pick, when the guy and pick the Hadassim, then right then and there you have Yirush, and that's considered a valid Yirush. Okay. So the Gemara says, after all, so what? Why do we need the Goyim to harvest the Hadassim in that case? Let the Jewish Avankri themselves do it. So what? So you'll have they themselves accomplish the Yirush, because they picked the Hadassim, and now the owner has Yirush, he knows that he's not getting back those Hadassim. And then what happens is the Avankri in turn is going and selling these Hadassim to somebody else. That constitutes Shinui Rishus. So therefore, we're good. Both things have been accomplished, Yirush and Shinui Rishus. We don't want mitzvah above Avera, but the fact is you need two things. You need Yirush and you need Shinui Rishus. At least the fact that you have a second thing makes it that really it's not a mitzvah bar baveira, that Marshall explains. So what's the problem? Why can't the Avankri harvest the Hadassim themselves? And then they accomplish Yirush by them. When they sell it to you, it accomplishes Shinui Rishus. And that's that. The answer is, Lo Tzricha, B'Hoshayna Da Avankri Gufaydu. You're right. When Rav Huna is telling the Avankri to make sure that the Goyim harvest the Hadassim, he's really talking about the Hadassim that the Avankri themselves are going to be using for their own Dalim. Well, then, there's no selling it to somebody else. So there's no Shinui Rishus. Therefore, we have to have that the Yirush is going to be accomplished by the Goyim harvesting them, and the Shinui Rishus is going to be accomplished by the Goyim then turning around and selling those to the Avankri. So that's why he's telling them you have to make sure to do it that way. So the Gemara asks, well, still, why do we need that? The Likniyua of a Shinui Maisa. Still, why can't we say that the Avankri acquired the Hadassim with Shinui Maisa, that they're changing something in the Hadassim themselves? Namely, that they're binding them together with the other minim. Therefore, isn't that another way in which a ganav acquires something, besides what we said, Yirush and Shinui Rishus, another one is Yirush and Shinui Maisa, where you change the thing in a way that we change the thing from the way it was originally. That also is an act of kinyan. The answer is, Kasava lulav ein tzarech eged. The answer is Rav Huna may hold that the lulav and the other minim do not have to be bound together. We touched on this point earlier in the Masechta. We're going to talk about it in greater detail later in the Masechta. The question: do you have to bind together the dalad minim in order to be yotze, or are you yotze even if you pick them up unbound? Or there are some Rishonim who say, and this is the halacha really, that even if you pick them up one by one, so if you pick up the lulav, and then the hadassim, and then the aravas, and so forth, you're also going to the dieva that way. The point is, therefore, if Rav Huna holds that way, then we could say the fact that the lulav doesn't need to be bound, so these hadassim are not necessarily being bound together with the other minim, and even if you do bind them, it's not considered a shinui, because it's not something that's essential to the fulfillment of the mitzvah. Therefore, you don't have a shinui. So we're back to, again, if these hadassim are going to be used by the Avankri themselves, then you only have Yirush, there's no shinui Rishus, there's no shinui Maisa. Therefore, the Huna is telling them to have the Goyim harvest the hadassim. The Im Tim Tzalayim, a lulav tzarech eged, or you could even conceivably answer, maybe the Huna says that the lulav does need to be bound, but on the other hand, on the other hand, this is an example of a change that can be restored to its original state. That kind of change is not considered a change as far as the halachas of Gezel. In other words, just that. An example that it gives in Bava Kamma is, let's say, for example, a person stole pieces of wood and built a piece of furniture out of them. That's not considered a permanent shinui because you can take apart the furniture and you have the same original pieces that you started with. As opposed to, let's say, if a person stole a large piece of wood, a person stole a wooden plank and then cut it and then sawed it in half, that would be a shinui because that's not something that's gonna be restored to the way it was. So the same thing over here. Even if you argue the lulav has to be bound, you unbind the lulav and the hadas is just as it was, therefore it's not a shinui maisa.
Question.
Yeah.
What's the difference between mashicha and shinui rishus? We're using two different terms. Does that mean that they're two different things?
Mashicha we use when you're buying something. When it's talking about stealing, then we use the expression shinui rishus. Right. I mean, it means, in other words, there's being done one of the regular actions that usually constitutes kinyan. For example, mashicha. But yeah, in terms of when we talk about the halachas of stealing and the halachas of when the ganav acquires it, then we use the expression, or the other person acquires it, then we use the expression shinui rishus. And that's just different terminology.
Okay, shinui rishus doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be done over a certain distance.
Yeah.
It can be done over a few. Right.
Yeah. Okay. Onward. So the Gemara asks, but can you have a shinui hashem? Why don't we have another possibility, yet another thing that can work in order for a ganav to acquire something? Is shinui hashem is where something is done to the thing that changes its name. Namely, Ikra Pavlet Osa Bahashta Hashina. Namely, originally these plants were just called in Aramaic Osa, which means Hadassim. And now, after they've been harvested or after they've been bound into the lulav, now they have a different name. Now people call them Hashayim. And Tosfos points out, after all, I mean, now you have this Shini Shem and this Shini Maisa. Fine, you could argue the Shini Maisa is not really because it can be undone. But now that goes together with the Shini Hashem, that once the Hadas is bundled together with the other Minim, now people no longer call it a Hadas, now people call it a Hashina, wouldn't that be reason enough that it should be valid? And the answer is, the Gemara says no, because Me'ikra Nami also Hashina Korulei, because the fact is, even before Hadassim are harvested, people often call them Hashina because they're used for the Hashina, they're used for the Dalet Minim. So we don't have that in our terminology. We just call them Hadassim. But in their time, I guess maybe you could say a similar thing. I mean, we call them by the Hebrew name Hadassim, as opposed to just calling them by the English name Myrtle, because we use them in the lulav. So I guess actually that would be a similar kind of thing to the way we're saying here in the Gemara. If we had that commonly before people harvest them, they call them myrtles, and only afterwards when they use them for lulav and esrog, only then do they change the name and call them hadas, then we could argue that's a shinui hashem. But since to begin with we call these plants hadasim even while they're growing, then therefore and the Gemara terminology they called them hoshina even while they're growing, or even before they've been bundled in the lulav, therefore that's not a shinui hashem. So therefore, we're left with that the only thing is going to be is there's yirush and there's shinui yishus. And again, if we're talking about the avankuris hadassim themselves, then there's not even going to be shinui yishus. Therefore, Rav Huna is requiring that you make sure that the goy harvests hadassim, and that way he accomplishes the yirush, and then he accomplishes the yirush and of the hadassim, that is, not of the land itself. And then when he sells you the avankri, when he sells you the hadassim, there's your shinui rishus, and now you, the avankri, are able to use those hadassim for your galadim.
What do you call them? Avanturim?
Throughout the sugya, we're calling them avankri, which we said at the beginning. Rashi says it means like small business people who sell little small things, like the equivalent nowadays would be somebody who runs a 99-cent store or something. Where they sell all kinds of small odds and ends. And the Aruch explains that Avankri means people who work for the Nasi, people who work for the Reish Kolosa.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's that. So that's the halacha. Again, the Alter Rebbe does explain that this is talking about now some of the Rishonim say that maybe this whole concept should only apply in places like Eretz Yisrael and Babel in the olden days, where Jews own most of the agricultural land. Would it necessarily apply in other places? Would it necessarily apply in the United States, where Jews don't own most of the land? So the Alter Rebbe forestalls that by saying the problem might be similar. If the goy stole it from another goy, the same considerations of yush and everything would apply to that also. And again, we would say that yush is not, that land is not subject to yush, and therefore we have this whole consideration. On the other hand, again, we're saying if the person actually holds the land under title of law, in other words, for example, to begin with, it came to this government by conquest. Then that's for example, think of the United States, where they conquered it, the colonists conquered and settled the land, they conquered it from the Indians, and they got title to it from the government. So then that would be considered a valid thing, and then we don't say that we don't say that's considered stolen land. Onward, turn it up on. Now we talk about a stolen lulav, and we talk about the matter of karka not being able to be stolen, not changing title. Lahalacha. So let's talk about that in terms. Let's talk about that as it relates to a sukkah. Turn it up on. Sukkah gzula. If a person steals a sukkah, now we said before that there's a few possibilities of how a sukkah could be stolen, and we're going to talk about soon in the Gemara over here some of those possibilities. So it was a stolen sukkah, found a sakat b'rishus ha-rabim, or a person sets up a sukkah in rishus ha-rabim, where then he's stealing from the rabim, because he's taking away place in the rishus ha-rabim from them without permission. Rabbi Eliezer posts the chacham machshirin. Rabbi Eliezer says that the sukkah is possible, the chachamim say it's kosher. So, Amrav, what's the case? Amrav Nachman, machlokas bishop tokev schavera v'otziyem v'sukkasa. The machlokas is, if Reuven forcibly removes Shimon from the sukkah that was built in his own land and throws him out and goes into that sukkah instead. Now, the sukkah itself was built out of movable pieces, but now it's attached to the ground, therefore it's considered like the ground. So it's not a matter of that now we can talk about whether the sukkah belongs to Reuven the thief or not. Really, the sukkah still belongs to Shimon because Karka ain't an exelus. But Rabbi Eliezer l'tanei, the only reason Rabbi Eliezer said sukkah is possible because he goes according to his own svara that we learned in the previous parak. He said a person can't be yotzi but somebody else's sukkah. Over here, in effect, what we consider is as if Reuven borrowed the sukkah from Shimon. Fine, but Rabbi Eliezer holds you can't sit in a borrowed sukkah. We said in the previous parak, he says you have to have a sukkah of your own. So any karka nigzelus. So either way, Rabbi Eliezer is going to say you can't be yotze. If we do say, not like we said before, if we say that Rabbi Eliezer disagrees with the premise that we said before and holds that land also is subject to gezel, if the person had yush, well then sukkah gzula, then it comes out as a stolen sukkah. It's considered stolen. It's considered that now it changed hands from Shimon to Reuven. And in that case, then he said what he said before, you can't. Then obviously you can't because mitzvah ba ba there. Well, he said not just mitzvah ba ba'avera, but again, since the pasuk says chaga sukkas tasa l'cha shivas yomim, we learned in the previous parak that Rabbi Eliezer holds that means the sukkah has to be yours. Well, it's zula, it's not yours. The inami karka ain't an exelus, and if we say that Rabbi Eliezer agrees with what we said before that land is not subject to the usual rules of stealing, there's never yirush on land. Well then, sukkah shuli, fine. I mean, we consider it a borrowed sukkah, but Rabbi Eliezer doesn't allow you to use a borrowed sukkah either. So that's why Rabbi Eliezer would say that it's possible regardless. Because one way or the other, the sukkah is not lochem. V'rabbanon l'tanayu. Meanwhile, the Rabbanon are, and actually, Tosfos says that actually Rabbi Eliezer does in fact hold that way. This that we said at the beginning of the Sugya, that Rabbi Eliezer, that this that we said at the beginning of the Sugya, that Karka in Nigzelus, and that we learned from Sugya, in the Gemara, in Bava Kama, Rabbi Eliezer disagrees with that limur and holds that Karka is Nigzelus. But here, the Gemara wants to say, even if we were to say that Rabbi Eliezer maybe after all agrees that Karka in Nigzelus, then we could still say there's a reason why he would say the Sugya is possible, because it amounts to being a borrowed Sugya. Meanwhile, the Rabbanon are going according to their own svara. They say you could be yotze with somebody else's sukkah. But karka ain't an exelus. They're going to say, as we said, that land is not subject to the rules of Gezel. The land is still considered to be Shimon's. The sukkah sholahi, therefore, it amounts to, it's a borrowed sukkah. Now, one interesting case that mentions in Shulchan Aruch is, what happens if, to begin with, Shimon went and built the sukkah on Reuven's land, and then Reuven throws him out of that sukkah and dwells in it? Then, actually, we say Reuven would not be Yotzeh, because the land itself is not to talk about Nigzelus or not. The land itself belonged to Reuven all this time. Now you're talking only about stealing the material of the sukkah, and that Gezel would apply to. And therefore you can't be Yotzer with it. But if Shimon had built the sukkah on Shimon's own property, and then Reuven threw him out of it, then the Chachamim would say, and this is the halacha, that Reuven is Yotzer sitting in such a sukkah. Okay, he shouldn't say bracha on it maybe again, because he's blaspheming Hashem by saying a bracha on something that he stole, and it is mitzvah ba'aveirah, but to be Yotzer the mitzvah of sitting in the sukkah, he would. Abel, but continues the Gemara, Gozal eats him. Suppose instead another kind of stolen sukkah is if a person stole wood, the sikach behen, and he used that wood for sach, divrei hakol, ein le'elav, may eats him. Everybody, both Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim, would agree that the victim is only entitled to the value of his wood back. You can't make the gazlan give back the actual wood. So you can't make the gazlan give back the actual wood, because now there's shini maisa and shini hashem. Before it was, so Rashi says a few reasons. First of all, there's shini maisa and shini hashem. There's you did something, you made this wood into schach, and you also, now it has a different name. Before it was called wood, now it's called schach. Furthermore, also, as the Gemara is going to go on to explain, there's something called takonas hashavim. Now you have the original case of takonas hashavim is, takonas hashavim means a takona that the Chachamim made to make it easier for people to do tshuva. Picture a case where a person stole a beam, a large beam, which is called in Hebrew morish, and he built it into a building. Now, midaraisa, we would say that he has to return the actual beam. Midrabbanan, though, we would say, if we made him do that, then he's likely to say, you know what, I can't be bothered at all. What are you going to make me tear down my whole house in order to return the beam? I can't be bothered. Therefore, I'm not going to bother returning it at all. We don't want him to do that. We want him to do tshuva. Therefore, the Chachamim said, you know what, the din is going to be that he's only responsible to pay back the value of it. He can keep the beam, and he just has to pay the value of it. He was cutting it. So therefore, that's another reason why this person who stole material for schach, why we should say, even aside from this shini maisa and shini hashem, but there's also takonas hashavim, that the Chachamim want to make it easier for him to do tshuva, and he's going to figure, if I have to tear down my sukkah, then I can't be bothered doing tshuva at all, and therefore instead we're going to allow him to pay back the value of it. So even Rabbi Yezer is going to agree with that would be fine. Not fine, okay, he's still stolen, he's still doing a mitzvah, blah, 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 but in terms of that he should be yotzer with the sukkah, he can be yotzer with it. And the Gemara says, mimai, how do we know that that's the case? How do we know that Rabbi Eliezer would hold that way? So, midi katani, dumya d'rushos rabim, because the Braisa mentioned it in the same breath as mentioning a sukkah in rushos rabim. Ma rushos rabim karta lavi dehu, just like rushos rabim, what's the problem? Is the land doesn't belong to him. The same way with the sukkah, we're talking about when the land is not his. That is where Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim would be arguing whether that's valid or not, whether he's yotzer or not. But as opposed to stealing wood, is not to build to use for schach, is nothing like that at all. Therefore, we can say that Rabbi Eliezer would agree that that's fine. Again, Tosfos says over here, as they said on the previous Amud, when you have the sukkah that Shimon built is not on the ground, but rather on a wagon or something, and then Reuven goes and throws him out of the sukkah and takes it over, that's a whole different matter than the sukkah and the wagon on the Teltlin, and then then Gezel would apply, and then therefore Reuven can't be yotzer with it. And we're not even going to say Takonas Hashavim over there. Actually, Rashi actually says this, Tosfos discusses this point, that actually we wouldn't even say Takonas Hashavim. We wouldn't even say this Takona that we just said about the beam, because it would be one thing if the person stole wood and then went to the trouble of making a sukkah using it. But here he didn't. He stole a ready-made sukkah on a wagon. Then we wouldn't say Takonas Hashavim. Then we would require him to return the actual sukkah, and therefore he can't be yotzer with it, because we would say that he's sitting in a sukkah gzula. In this connection, the Gemara brings a story. There was an old lady who came in front of Rav Nachman with a complaint. Omrele, she tells him, Reish Galusa, Makula Rabbanan, the Bey Reish Galusa, the Reish Galusa, the governor of the Jews in Babel, and all of the Chachamim who are part of the Reish Galusa's entourage, the Sukkah Gzula have a Yassi. They're all sitting in a stolen Sukkah. What happened was, before Yom Tov, the slaves of the Reish Galusa had gone and illegally taken wood from her property and used it for Sach. So now she's complaining that all the Reish Galusa and all the rabbis who are with him are all sitting in a stolen Sukkah. So she's crying out about it, but like Ashkach bar Rav Nachman, Rav Nachman did not pay her any attention. Why not? We'll talk about it in a minute. So she said to him, how could you ignore me? Don't you realize who I am? It's a dehavaleva avua tlasmea v'tamni srei abi, a woman whose father had 318 servants. Now, there are some of the Rishonim who say, maybe she means that her father, Taka, was a rich guy, and he used to have that number of servants. However, Rashi says, no, she's referring to Avram Avinu. She's saying, I'm a Jewish woman, I'm a daughter, granddaughter, of Avraham Avinu, who had that many servants, 318 servants. How are you talking that you're ignoring me? How could it be that such a person is crying out in front of you, and you're not paying her any attention? So Rav Nachman does not answer her directly. He speaks to the people around him. He says, this is a kolonis, Rashi says, a lady who likes to use her voice. But you should know that Ein Lev of Jmei Eitzim Bilvad, you should know that she's entitled to the value of that wood, but not the actual wood itself. And therefore, the sukkah is not considered a sukkah gzula, as we just said, because they were koina that wood with shinu reshus and shinu yashem and takonis hashavim and all that. In this case, apparently there's no yirush because she's expecting the wood itself back. But nevertheless, takonis hashavim would say that they're not required to return the wood itself, and therefore the wood is not considered stolen. It's considered they've acquired it by halacha, and therefore she's only entitled to the value. Now, what's going on over here? Why is Rav Nachman ignoring her originally? Why does she think it's a winning argument to mention Abraham's servants? So the Aruch Lamer explains like this. Rav Nachman ignored her to begin with because this took place on the first day of Yom Tov. You're not supposed to judge Dinei Mamonos on Yom Tov. So therefore, Rav Nachman figured, I don't want to judge it. So what happens? So she starts complaining. She's saying that she's saying, but you know what? Listen, Avraham was so careful with his servants to train them that they should do the right thing and not to steal. How you talking that the Reish Galusa is not doing that and allowing his servants to steal and then allowing that he and everybody else are going to sit in a stolen sofa? So now Rav Nachman is concerned that now she's going to start spreading the story that they're sitting in a stolen sukkah. And the halacha is that not. The halacha is, as we just said, that the servants themselves did something wrong. Fine. Maybe the servants themselves shouldn't say bracha when they go into the sukkah, but everybody else perfectly could because they're not the ones who did the aveira. Therefore, Rav Nachman, but instead he didn't want to answer her directly because that would amount to judging Dinei Mamonos on Yom Tov. So instead, like, he speaks to the people around him, like, in other words, in her earshot, so she should learn what the halacha is, but without telling her directly, which would be judging Dinei Mamonos on Yom Tov. And he says that he's saying for her benefit, but not directly to her, that no, you're only entitled to the value of the wood. The sukkah is not considered a stolen sukkah. Continuing on this topic, Gemara says, Omer Ravina, Hai Kshura de Matalalta de Gzula, suppose a person steals a beam and builds it into a sukkah, Avdi Le Rabbanan Takanta, Mishim Takonas Morish, then the Chachamim applied Takonas Morish, Takonas Hashomim, that we just said before, that we don't require him to tear down his sukkah in order to return the beam. So the Gemara asks Pshita, isn't that obvious? Maishnam Eitzim. Why is it any different? We just said that if a person steals wood and uses it for schach, then he's cutting it. Why would we think it's anything different with a beam? The answer is you could argue wood is very easily available. So therefore, let's say we're gonna say, listen, you Gazlan have to pay back the other guy the value of the wood you stole from him, and then fine, it's easy enough for him to go and buy other wood and use it for his schach. But Aval Hai Loishkita, but a beam is not that easy to get. So if the guy stole a beam, maybe we would say that, you know what, it's going to be very hard for the nigzal, for the victim, to go and take the money and use it to find another beam. So Kamash Malan, nevertheless, Ravina is telling us that it doesn't matter, and we still apply to Kana Sashav. However, the Gemara says, Hani Mila Bigoy Shiva. Now all that only applies during the 7 days of Sukkot. Abel Bosa Shiva, Hodu Beine. But after the 7 days, then after the 7 days, after Sukkot is over, then he has to return the actual beam. Then Takonas Ashavim, then Takonas Ashavim doesn't apply anymore. So the Ritva explains that this means even if the victim goes and takes the Gazlan to Beis Din during Sukkot, if he only pays back after Sukkot, if he's gonna pay back during Sukkot, then he would have to take out the beam, and then Beis Din might well tell him in that case, then fine, don't do that until after Sukkot. In other words, the Ritva learns, and he explains that Rashi actually holds differently, that if the Nigzo were to only take the other person to Beis Din after Sukkot is over, then he would be entitled to his actual beam back. Takonas Hashavim doesn't apply anymore. But if he takes him to Beis Din during Sukkot, then he's never going to get back his beam, even if the guy only pays him back after Sukkot. That's how the Ritva learns. But after the 7 days of Sukkot, according to the Ritva's understanding of Rashi, that would mean once Sukkot is over, regardless of when he brought him to Beis Din, according to the Ritva himself, it means if he brought him to Beis Din only after Sukkot, then he has to return the actual beam itself. But if he attached the beam in place using cement, then even after the 7 days of Sukkot, he only has to give him the value of it, because then at that point he attached it in place, and therefore it becomes like part of his house, and therefore the regular year-round Takonas Hashavim applies. Okay. So that was a digression to talk about the dinim of a stolen sukkah. So now we understand there's different kinds of stolen sukkahs. Some of them a person is not yotze. There's many of them where a person is yotze. The main one that the Gemara was focusing on is where a person steals wood for schach or a beam to build the walls of the sukkah, where then we say that sukkah can still be kosher regardless. Okay. Now, getting back to the psulim of the dalim minim, tana, we learn in a brisa, yavish posel, a dry wallah, the other minim, is posel. Rabbi Yehuda machshir, but Rabbi Yehuda says that it's kosher. Now, why is that? Amar Rabba, machloikas the lulav. The machloikas specifically is regarding the lulav and the hadas and arabas as well. Namely, Dirabon and Sabi makshin and lulav the esrav. The chachamim say we make a hekesh between the lulav and the esrav. Now, the posit goes, olakaftim lachem bayemarishin, pre eitz hodr, kapes tmarim, ba'anap eitz aves, ba'arve nochal. So the only one that actually says the word hodr by is the esrog. So the Chachamim are saying that's true. Nevertheless, though, we have a hekesh between the esrog and the other medium, and therefore what applies to the esrog applies to the other ones. Since the esrog has to be hodr, it has to be beautiful, so do the other ones. A dry lulav, as we said at the beginning of the parak, one reason, it's possible it's not beautiful. Some derabon and sari, makshin and lulav the esrog, the Chachamim hold to make a hekesh between the lulav and the esrog. Ma esrog bori hodr ak lulav bori hodr, just like the esrog has to be hodr, so does the lulav. But Rabbi Yehuda Sava, like Makshin and Lulav Esrog, whereas Rabbi Yehuda does not accept that hekesh. Now, here's an interesting point. Rashi says that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't accept that hekesh because Rashi says when it comes to all the Yud Gimel Midrash Chapter Yudreshes to him. Now, hekesh is not explicitly listed as one of them, but it's an outgrowth of one of the other ones. Basically, a hekesh is a form of binyan out, sort of. Anyway, Rabbi Yehuda holds, says Rashi, that of the Yud Gimel Midrash, only a Kal V'Chomer is the one that a person can come up with on his own. All the other Midas, Shatter and Yedreshes Behem, a person has to have learned from his Rebbe that we can apply it over here. So Rabbi Yehuda hadn't learned this Hekesh from his Rebbeim, therefore he couldn't hold of it. Tosfos disagrees with that concept. Tosfos says that no, actually there's many of the Yud Gimel Midas that we can use ourselves, Hekesh being one of them. But nevertheless, Tosfos says that Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim are arguing on Svara. That after all, just because two things are together in a pasuk doesn't necessarily mean that there's a svara to say that they should be equated. Rabbi Yehuda might well hold, for example, that the word hodr can only apply to fruit, and therefore that necessarily it's only limited to the esrog, which is the only one of dal minim, which is a fruit. So therefore, he might hold, so not a matter of he didn't learn this hekesh from his Rebbe, and not a matter of he couldn't come up with this hekesh by himself, but that he holds the svara that this isn't a valid hekesh. Anyway, so therefore, so Rabbi Yehuda therefore would hold. We don't make that hekesh, therefore the lulav is kosher if it's dry. Aval, the esrog, but when it comes to the esrog itself, you're a hakel, hodr beinan. Everybody is going to agree that the esrog needs to be hodr, and it can't be dry. So the question is, the lulav, like boy of Yehuda, hodr? You're telling me when it comes to the lulav, Rabbi Yehuda does not require it to be hodr, but now, we learned in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda over Yagdenu Milamayla, that Rabbi Yehuda, now we have the case over there where the leaves of the lulav are starting to spread apart. We said when the lulav is young, then the leaves are tightly bound together to the shedra, as we know, the normal lulavim that we buy before Sukkot. But eventually, if the branch matures, then the bottoms of the leaves start hardening and they start spreading outward from the central stem. And then the Mishnah had said that such a lulav is still kosher. Rabbi Yehuda had said you have to tie it from above. You have to tie those spread out leaves so that the tops of them are back together with the shedra. Now my time. Now why would Rabbi Yehuda require you to do that? Lav b'shem b'boi hodr. Presumably it would be because Rabbi Yehuda requires the lulav to be hodr as well. And if the leaves are sticking out, then it's not hodr. The answer is loy, not necessarily. You could say there's a wee different reason why Rabbi Yehuda requires it. Kedikatani taima, as we learn continuing in that braisa, Rabbi Yehuda, I mean, Meshumer of Tarifan, the posik says kapois tmarim, the posik calls the lulav branches from a palm tree. The word kapois is also related to the word kofos, which means bound. Therefore, it means by a part of your percent. Therefore, it means if the leaves are separated, then you have to bind them together. So not because of Hodr, but because he holds that the word kapos tmarim itself means that the leaves are tightly bound to the shedra, and if they're already mature enough that they're not naturally bound anymore, then you have to bind them yourself. By the way, the Chachamim do agree with that, the Hatchila. They just say that the lulav, you should get a lulav that has the leaves tightly bound to the shedra. But if not, then b'dievet, the Chachamim are saying, you know, you're so therefore, we don't have to say that Yehuda is requiring a hodr for the lulav. He may not. Okay, but loy boy hodr. Are you telling me though still that Yehuda does not require hodr for the lulav? Well, it's not. We learn in a Mishnah later in our Perek. Ein oydin sa lulav ela b'minoi, divrei Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says when it comes to binding the lulav, you have to use something of the species of the lulav itself. So for example, like we do nowadays, where we use lulav leaves for the purpose. Now, Lechora, why would Rabbi Yehuda, my time, why would Rabbi Yehuda require that you use Minoi? La Mishum Deboi Hodr. Lechora, the reason is because of Hodr. Because if you're using something else, then it doesn't necessarily look so nice. It doesn't match. Whereas when you use something that's of the same min, for example, lulav leaves, then it looks more beautiful. The answer is like, that's not why Rabbi Yehuda said that. After all, Rava says, when Rabbi Yehuda says you have to use the same min, he doesn't mean you have to use lulav leaves. He means even that you can use siv, which is a kind of plant, like an ivy or something that grows around the palm tree, it climbs up it. Or even you could use some of the bark of the palm tree. Now those things don't look anything like lulav. The reason why Rabbi Yehuda requires you to use is a whole different reason, nothing to do with Hodr. The Ela my time of Rabbi Yehuda, so why over there does Rabbi Yehuda hold that the lulav daft has to be bound with something from the palm tree? So because of a lulav tzarech egin. The reason is because he holds, as we discussed before, the lulav, the minim, do have to be bound together in order to be yod to the mitzvah. We said before, Rav Huna may or may not hold that way. The Chachamim, who disagree with Rav Yehuda, do hold that lulav ain't sarif eged. You don't even need to bind them at all. And if you bind them, therefore, you can bind them with whatever you want. Rav Yehuda holds that the lulav sarif eged, to be yod to the mitzvah, you must bind the minim. Therefore, v'ki ma'isi min ha'achrina. So the problem is, if you use a different min, havalehu chamisha minin, then you're going to have five, then you're being over on bal tosef. So that's why Rabbi Huda said you have to use something from the palm tree itself. Nothing to do with hodr. Fine. So the Gemara says, and actually Tosfos points out, I mean, the Gemara could have pointed out later on when we discussed this question of whether Lulav Tzarech Eged and of Yehuda's opinion and the Chacham's opinion, because the Chacham mentioned over there an example of the people of Yerushalayim who used golden wires to bind their Lulavim. And therefore you see that that's kosher, even though gold is a different min. Obviously that beautifies the mitzvah. You can't say that it would be a lack of hodr. Nevertheless, though, the Gemara ignores that point and says that the reason is, anyway, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't really hold on harder, but he holds you can't use a different name, period. Okay. So the question is, Rabbi Esrib mi boi Rabbi Yehuda harder? Okay, let's return to the Esrib. Does Rabbi Yehuda, in fact, require the Esrib itself to be harder? V'altanya, we learn in a braisa, our bas minim shavavavav, the four minim that are in the vavav, k'shem shein perchsimeh, just as you're not allowed to have less than them, you can't leave any of them out, kach ein v'sifin aleihen, similarly you can't add anything to them, and also, not only you can't add anything, but loy matza esrog, suppose, for example, a person can't get a hold of an esrog, loy yabi like parish, he should not use a parish, which is a fruit called, in English, a quince. It's a little fruit resembling an apple, so don't use that. Loy rimay, or a pomegranate, loy dabar acher, or anything else. Tosfos points out, now we're saying don't use a different min, but on the other hand, if all you have is a posel or esrog, then maybe the shasad chak, you should do that and even make a bracha on it. Whether you would actually make a bracha on it is not so simple. There's more discussion about that. But anyway, but don't use a different species, v'loy dover afer, or anything else. There's no substitutes. And continues the braisa, k'mushin k'shenin, all the dalad minim, if they're wilted, so they're a little bit starting to dry out, then they're still kosher, but yuveshim stolen, but if they're completely dry, as we discussed yesterday about the different opinions among Rishonim, how dry is dry, anyway, stolen, then they're kosher, Rav Yehuda oimer af yuveshim. Rav Yehuda said the dalad minim are kosher, even if they're dry. The pashtus he's talking about the esrog as well. The Amr of Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda says, I'll give you an example where people use dry dalad minim and they were yotze. Ma'aseh b'vnei krachin. It happens with people who live in big cities where they don't live anywhere where the lulavim grow. So they couldn't easily get new lulavim. Shalim ha'rishin es lulavim l'bnei b'neihem. So they would bequeath the lulavim to their grandchildren, and their grandchildren would use them. So you see that. Now, obviously, by that time, they're long since dry. So you see, therefore, you can use a dry lulav. But Amru Lahem, and the Chacham answer to them, Loi really, they answer to him, Rabbi Yehuda, Misham Raya, you bring a proof from there. Ein Shasav Chak Raya, you can't bring a proof from a Shasav Chak, from an emergency situation like that, where they have no other way of getting any other kind of lulav. Anyway, the point is, Katoni Midas, so we said, Rabbi Yehuda, I'm an activation sharing. Rabbi Yehuda is saying even dry ones are kosher. My lava esrog. Lechora, Rabbi Yehuda is talking about also the esrog, that even the esrog is kosher when it's dry. And the answer, and that would show that he doesn't hold even that you need a hodr by the esrog. Rashi points out, on Aleph, that there are, that later on in the parak, we're going to discuss a few different limudim that we learned from the word hodr. Some of them take the word hodr not in the sense of beautiful at all, but in other senses, as we're going to learn later on. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda, the Gemara is assuming right now, maybe Rabbi Yehuda could hold like one of those opinions, and therefore even the answer doesn't have to be beautiful. And the answer is right. That's not necessarily what Rabbi Yehuda means. He may mean only a lulav. He's referring only to the lulav. That can be dry. That he doesn't care about hodr because, like you said, he doesn't hold of the hekesh. But the esrog itself, he may well say that if it was dry, it would in fact be possible. Okay.